Joining me now via, the internet, obviously, we don't always have the opportunity to do in person, especially when someone is going from city to city and stumping there to try to become our next congressman in the 4th District. Doyle Canning is joining me now. Doyle, good afternoon.
Great to be with you, George. Looking to be your first congresswoman, in fact.
That would be awesome. We don't hold any political sides here, but certainly, you know, someone who is qualified, who really wants the job, that's part of the first important part is getting someone who really wants to do the job. So thank you for your willingness to participate in the process. So tell me a little bit about yourself. I know you graduated from the University of Oregon Law School, but tell me a little bit about leading up to that and maybe the few years following that.
Sure. Well, it's great to be with you. I'm Doyle Canning. I live in Eugene, and I am a Democrat running for Congress to represent the newly drawn 4th District of Oregon in the U.S. House of Representatives. I didn't necessarily see myself going into politics, but many people ask me, you know, how did you get on this path? How did you come to get the idea in your head that you could make a difference and change the world? And so I have reflected on that quite a bit. And I think it goes back to when I was very young. My mother was a strong role model. She was an educator. She spoke Spanish to me at home. She was an activist herself and dragged me along to protests against apartheid and the war in Central America. She was also married to an abusive alcoholic. And when things got very difficult in our home, she would tell me to run to the neighbors. And from my neighbors at a very tender age, I learned the value of solidarity and community, and that when the system fails us, we have to come together and support each other. Because, you know, my mom would call the police, but they either wouldn't come or they would look the other way. And so I learned very young that there are two systems of justice in our country, one for the powerful, one for the rest of us. And that's what really put me on a path to become a community organizer, what sent me to law school, and why I'm running for Congress now, because I know that that fundamental inequality in our system has created so many crises in our country, in our communities, for our climate, and that politics as usual isn't going to deliver the solutions that Oregon needs now. And so I have been working as a community organizer, as a progressive policy strategist, and yes, proud alum of the University of Oregon Law School, specializing in environmental law, working to stand with environmental justice movements, with progressive causes and campaigns for 2 decades. And now I am running to bring those values to Congress on behalf of our beautiful 4th District of Oregon.
So Doyle, I've been doing this a lot of years. I've talked with our Congress people from North Carolina, Tennessee. You know, I've got some close friends that have actually been in Congress. I'm curious as to what your idea is of what you're going to get into by becoming, the 4th District congressperson. A lot of folks I talked to, Heath Shuler's a friend of mine. He went in there, he came out, and he said, I couldn't do it because it just wasn't suitable for, you know, people to go in there and make a difference. How do you feel like going into this, you're going to be able to be that catalyst for some change?
There are 13,000 or so lobbyists who work on Capitol Hill, and they're paid very well to keep the failed status quo going for billionaires and big corporations. And everywhere I've worked, whether it's at the United Nations or in the U.S. Congress or at the Eugene City Council, you know, the fossil fuel industry is there with their army of lobbyists and lawyers and campaign contributions, putting the pressure on to get their way. And we deserve a champion who is not bought or going to bow to that pressure. And that is who I am and who I have always been. And that consistent, progressive, values-based leadership is what our district deserves in our member of Congress. I haven't given up on the promise of American democracy, and I don't want you to either. You know, this election is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to choose our direction. We've had the same Congress member for 36 years. And this moment, 2022, voters get to decide what kind of representative you want in the Capitol. And I am asking you to choose the one who has shown for 20 years the leadership on the issues that matter most to us: Medicare for all, affordable housing, action on the climate crisis. And that's what I will deliver in Congress.
I don't know if you've talked to other people that may have run or that may be in Congress. I know you mentioned you worked at Congress. Do you feel like there is enough support to maybe get some legislation going to decrease the effect that lobbyists could have on our elective process?
Well, yes. I mean, that's one of the main reasons I'm in this fight. Because after spending so many years working for groups that are pushing for universal health care, for example, or for action on climate, or for changes to federal housing policy to end homelessness and invest in affordable housing, you know, I've seen the ways that big money bends the rules for billionaires. And the need for change is urgent. You know, we have more inequality in America today than we did during the Gilded Age. And that won't change until we elect leaders who are unbought by billionaires. And that's really the choice in this election. I think, you know, the American people, and certainly the voters of Oregon's 4th District, do not want a Democrat that works for billionaires like Michael Bloomberg. That is not what we want in our member of Congress. And that's why my campaign has so much momentum, so much enthusiasm amongst young people, rural communities, from college Democrats to ranchers in Douglas County. You know, our coalition is strong because Oregon's values are strong.
You know, the sad thing about it is that the billionaires that are fighting to protect their interest could single-handedly solve some of the issues and still remain billionaires. And that just gets me. I don't really get that. But let's talk a little bit about some of the...
This is very true.
I know.
You know, when we talk about a wealth tax or making sure that billionaires aren't, you know, stashing their cash offshore in the Bahamas and have to pay taxes like the rest of us, it's paying, you know, a modest fair share to be part of American society, to pay your taxes just like the rest of us do in our paycheck every week, and still be billionaires. And I think that's only fair and what most Americans want to see.
Well, yeah, and even, you know, this is off topic a little bit, but even if we didn't tax them to the rate which they should be taxed, if they could just donate to the causes that are out there to help our country be better.
They'd rather buy Twitter and get blasted off into space.
There you go.
So that's where we're at. You know, it's not going to be voluntary. We have to change the law. And the fastest law that ever changed was the Trump tax cuts. You know, Congress worked real quick when billionaire tax breaks were on the line. And we need that kind of urgency to deliver solutions for Oregonians now.
Now let's talk about some of the issues that are important to you. Obviously, climate seems to be something that you've said that is of your concern, and homelessness. Let's start off with the homelessness issue, because it's multifaceted. I mean, it deals with mental health issues. It deals with job security. It deals with the high prices of homes and everything. Talk me through your idea of how to start healing this process and bringing folks back into communities.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you know, at the root of the homelessness crisis that Oregon is currently in the throes of is this bigger than Gilded Age inequality in our society. And the West Coast is the fastest growing region in the nation for homelessness. And it also has the fastest rising home prices. I mean, there's a clear correlation there. And our communities, whether it's Eugene or Florence or even the state of Oregon, isn't going to be able to solve this crisis without, you know, re-leveling the rules at the top that have been rigged in favor of Wall Street and billionaires and big corporations. And that's why I'm running for Congress, because that's really, you know, where change needs to happen to rewrite this ship that has gone aground, which is a housing market that has put home buying and even renting out of reach for so many people in our district. And, you know, I think about one of my supporters down in Coos Bay. Her name is Ashley. You know, she is being evicted from her home come summertime because it's being flipped into a commercial Airbnb. And I've heard that story up and down the coast. You know, private equity firms and big Wall Street players coming in, buying up properties and essentially creating unregulated hotels. And meanwhile, working Oregonians who are, you know, working in the schools or in healthcare or at the restaurants, you know, that people are coming to the coast to enjoy, can't find a place to live within an hour or even 2 hours drive. And, you know, that just, it tears at the fabric of our communities in fundamental ways. And so that's why I'm in this fight. You know, we need a champion in Congress who is focused on delivering what we need, which is the resources for real change for affordable housing. And I'm proud to be a co-founder of a national movement called Homes for All. After the foreclosure crisis, a national coalition of groups that work in housing advocacy got together and we said, millions of people have just been evicted by these big banks while they got a bailout. How do we make sure this never happens again? And we came up with a plan for reform of federal housing policy. It's now a bill in Congress called the Homes for All Act. And that is what I will champion as Oregon's 4th District Congresswoman.
Now, one of the other hot button issues that everybody seems to be talking about is the logging industry versus the climate industry. How do you feel that the two of them can meet and both survive, or do you feel that way?
Well, you know, Oregon is very blessed in the natural riches that we have here, particularly in the Coast Range. You know, the Oregon State University School of Forestry has put out some remarkable science that our Coast Range forests sequester more carbon per acre than the Amazon rainforest, which, you know, everyone knows is known as the lungs of the world. We have our own little lungs of the world right here in our backyard. And it's a tremendous opportunity to transform the incentive structure, to really create federal jobs, good paying union federal jobs, in restoring those forests and increasing their capacity to sequester carbon, which also makes our communities more resilient in the face of wildfire. So I think there are real opportunities here. I don't think we necessarily need to be, I guess to use a pun, at loggerheads. We can find a way forward together that both creates jobs in the woods and cools our climate.
And obviously, you know, fire has been a big thing over the past, you know, several years, and it just seems to be increasing in veracity as the days move forward. Climate change is something that, you know, a lot of people, certain groups of people don't want to talk about or don't want to believe is happening. But then there's the evidence right before our eyes, what is happening. What kind of legislature do you see maybe coming forth to, I mean, obviously we're working toward more battery-powered vehicles, but then there's also issues of carbon footprints with the manufacturers of batteries. Where do we find that? I know wind and solar are in there. Where do we find that that level playing field?
Well, there's so much in the question you just posed. I think fundamentally what we need to understand is that the fossil fuel industry still enjoys big tax breaks and cash giveaways from the United States Congress. In this most recent Congress, I was advising Greenpeace, and we were working on, with a big coalition, on the president's Build Back Better agenda. And this was a bill drafted by Democrats, and it included big handouts to the fossil fuel industry. Until we start handing out that cash, not to the fossil fuel industry, but to renewable energy that's creating good jobs here at home, we won't see the kind of tipping point that we need to have to move our country towards the renewable energy future that we all know is coming. And the fossil fuel industry is, you know, dragging their feet and lobbying in Congress and trying to slow walk the change, but the change is here. You know, I ordered the F-150 Lightning pickup truck the day it came out, and I'm still on the waiting list and won't get one this year. That is how popular that truck was on day one. And, you know, once we get these vehicles really in the market and we have the infrastructure in place to charge them, who will want to buy gas ever again? And the industry knows that. So they're fighting the change. And we need fighters in Congress who are going to push forward and get it done. And that's who I am. And that's why I'm running. Now, on the question of wildfire, here in Oregon, we've had some, as everyone listening knows, some absolutely devastating wildfires in recent years. And even if we transition to 100% renewable energy tomorrow, those risks will remain with us for the foreseeable future. And so there's real work that we need to do to protect property and to protect lives from the risk of wildfire that is exacerbated by the droughts that we're seeing caused by climate change. And so, you know, Senator Wyden has a bill that he has put forward that would invest in rural Oregon's capacity to be more fire resilient and, you know, use some practices like prescribed burning in the wetter seasons that reduce the risks. And that's the kind of investment that we deserve and that we need, because lives are at stake.
You mentioned having to wait for your vehicle, you know, that you're not going to get. The car manufacturers seem to be getting on board. And as you said, as it happens, there's going to be less and less reliability on the fossil fuels. These companies are not going to go away. Do you see a way of, like, I know you don't want to incentivize them to, you know, to continue building on fossil fuel, but maybe some of these companies that would break off and branch off and become part of the renewable process rather than the fossil fuel process?
Well, there's certainly a lot of opportunity in the market. And here in Oregon, we have the best offshore wind real estate in the United States off of the coast of Coos Bay and Bandon. And the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management is, you know, calling for bids for that offshore wind development project. And not one bidder is from the United States. All of the firms who are bidding on the project are from Northern Europe because those countries have invested in the technology and have the capacity to stand up a project like that. So that in itself is kind of an indictment of our lack of leadership, our lack of foresight for decades, that now that the transition is here, we're not competitive. And that's what we've got to shift. And, you know, fossil fuel companies are welcome to make that shift. But, you know, as a lot of people in my field talk about, you know, do you want to go with Blockbuster or do you want to go with Netflix? You know, there's sort of a quantum leap and it's a whole different kind of industry. And we need like a diverse energy mix. And so there's a lot of opportunities for Oregon and for our country.
But doesn't some of that responsibility fall on the education system as well, churning out those people with the knowledge of the technology needed to move forward?
Absolutely. And, you know, here in our district, Oregon State University, as our, you know, forestry and ag university, has tremendous leadership, already is leading on climate science and climate solutions. you know, OSU's Tidal Energy Research Facility in Newport is cutting edge, the best in the country, ready to scale with federal investments. We can really lead, and our universities can really lead in training the next generation and creating jobs in renewable energy fields.
Now, one of the responsibilities, obviously, for the Congress or specific representative from the district, you know, is to try to, you know, build on that, you know, bring money in for fighting fires, bring money in for technology, bring money in for, you know, certain projects that are important, you know, whether it's dredging ports or stuff like that. You know, do you feel like those are important issues as well?
Absolutely. And, you know, Congressman DeFazio, to his great credit, has been fantastic and focused on delivering those kinds of investments, particularly on the coast. You know, the other day I was touring the port of Port Orford with the mayor, and he was showing me the jetty and the dredging operation that Congressman DeFazio delivered for the South Coast that really keeps the whole fishing economy of Port Orford going, and, you know, can't exist without those investments. And we deserve a voice in Congress who is going to be focused not just on the flashier projects, but on projects like water and sewer investments. You know, every local city councilor or local elected official that I've met with on the coast has pointed to the need for drinking water infrastructure, sewer infrastructure, that the systems that we have are, you know, decades old and deteriorating, and smaller towns can't put up a bond to fix them. You know, we need help. And that's what our congressperson should be focused on delivering.
So there's so many more things we can talk about. Unfortunately, I don't have all the time that I would like to spend with you, but give me your best speech for why you're the candidate I should vote for, your elevator speech, if you will.
I'd be glad to, George. Thank you. Well, I'm Doyle Canning. I'm a Democrat running for Congress to represent you in Washington and not billionaires and big corporations. I am the best candidate that Democrats can put forward in this tough election year of 2022, in a midterm year that will be tough for our party. We need a candidate who is standing strong and consistent in progressive values, a dirt road Democrat who has support in rural Oregon, and someone who can inspire young people and has the support on the campuses of UO and OSU. And that's me. I'm the Democrat who's been campaigning in every county. I have an intergenerational, transpartisan, rural-urban coalition behind me. And that's what we need to take on Republican Alex Skarlatos. And I would be grateful for your vote by May 17th.
Doyle Canning, thank you so much for your time today. It's really appreciative. And if you or when you, you know, make it to that next level, hope you'll still keep us in mind. I know that Congressman DeFazio was quite a frequent visitor to our area here and to our station, and we appreciate that. So hopefully you'll feel the same way.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be with you. And don't forget to vote by May 17th.
Next hour, it's candidate for Governor Court Boyce, Bettina Hannigan's coming in too, and we'll talk about golf.